The following program contains views and opinions that do not necessarily reflect those of KMRE staff or of the Spark Museum of Electrical Invention.
It's Cascadia News Now. I'm Stephanie Contours, and I want to start off by saying happy Hanukkah, happy pre-solstice, happy all of the days of light for everybody. And whatever you're doing, I hope that you are happy and light and warm. I am joined by my co-host Dave Willingham and Cascadia Weekly's Tim Johnson. And tonight, we welcome our very special guests, Robert Clark and Suzanne Blaze. Suzanne Blaze is KMRE's general manager. That's the station you're listening to right now, unless you're listening to KAVZ. And Robert is our operations manager. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Stephanie. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes,
it's very long time listener, first time guest.
Well, now don't forget your gardening with George experience.
So this is fantastic because I have in this room the people who make radio happen in Bellingham and make community radio stay alive, and we're going to get more into that. But first, we have some crowing to do. It is tonight is the night of the Geminids, did I say that right? And so stars are going to be shooting across the sky, but last night stars fell in Alabama and it was awesome. Dave, recap for us.
So Alabama politics is hard, so I'm just going to go with the really easy version of this. So Jeff Sessions, longtime senator from Alabama, was promoted to attorney general by the new administration, which opened up his seat. Luther Strange was appointed to hold it, and he ran in contention to fill out the rest of that term, which lasts until 2020. And they had a primary, a Republican primary back in the fall that Luther Strange did not win. Instead, repeatedly disgraced former Supreme Court Justice Roy Moore won on the Republican side. And last night, Democrat Doug Jones beat him by a hair, you know, a 27,000 vote hair, and became the new senator from Alabama.
And I want to talk about whether or not that was expected or how much, but first, you said repeatedly disgraced. So let's all pounce on that for a second. And what did you mean by that?
Well, Roy Moore is, he's been in the news a lot this century for repeated outlandish behavior, for saying that all the amendments after the 10th should be repealed, for erecting a giant monument to the Ten Commandments and then fighting it when he was told he couldn't do that on public property, for instructing judges in Alabama to ignore marriage equality. He technically, while running, was still a Supreme Court justice, but had not been allowed to keep his seat. He had not left his seat, but he wasn't allowed to perform the duties of Supreme Court justice for that last one.
And this is without even talking about the salacious news of the past several months.
He was a disgrace in the 21st century because of his behaviors and views that lead back to the 19th century and maybe the 18th century.
Yeah, and you know, I think that it was kind of generally assumed that that sort of what we politely call unreconstructed, hardcore Southern good old boy racism was just going to win the day, because I don't know many people who have a tremendously high amount of regard for Alabama and the people therein. And to be fair, looking at the exit polls, we don't have full data yet, but some of that was justified. You know, Roy Moore won very heavily with white men and women, and it was really historic turnout by African Americans, larger than any time Barack Obama ran, that carried the day for Doug Jones.
Well, the interesting thing in my view about it, as far as a trend, Alabama went very strongly for Trump, but the last two state elections of importance, you know, went strongly against Trump. And so if we're going to say that that is the stronghold for the Trump administration. It doesn't appear to be particularly strong at this point. The really interesting thing to me was what happened in the, let's say, the under 40, under 30 cohort in Alabama was like 16 to 22 points to Doug Jones, which, you know, if I were a strategist for the Republican Party and I was thinking that that might be the new generation coming up and forward and reflective of their views, they're in trouble. And I think the other thing that comes forward that I don't think is immediately understood by most people, but U.S. Senate position is a six-year term, which means that this this particular senator is going to probably outlast the particular current regime. And if he does good things for the state of Alabama, he may be reelected again and again.
One of the things about this story that I think is particularly interesting to me is how much traditional, what you might consider traditional Republicans, disowned Roy Moore completely. And even Shelby, who's like, what, in his 80s? One of the things I read some of his comments, and he was saying the thing that he didn't like was that Roy Moore didn't follow the law. You know, when he was told straight out, it's illegal for you to put it there, he was like, I don't care. It's what I want to do. So that was one of the main reasons why he had wanted nothing to do with Roy Moore.
Yeah, and I really hope that this is a wake-up call for a number of folks in the Republican Party, because it shows that you cannot rely on that base every time in Alabama. And if you can't count on it there, everywhere else looks a little shakier. But one of the most exciting things to me is the story of this massive African-American turnout. And it shows that hard work and groundwork really pays off. The NAACP did a tremendous job reaching out to everyone who voted in 2016. They had people on the ground 4 months to make this happen. And, you know, it...
Well, they brought in Charles Barkley.
And they brought in Charles Barkley.
They're at the end to excite the in, you know...
What does that mean for people who don't remember Charles Barkley?
Well, he's from Alabama, and he's an African-American basketball legend. Mm-hmm. And so his credentials are really well known.
Right. I would say that he absolutely did his base did respond. His true base did respond. It was the only reason he lost was because of these new voters who thought, oh my gosh, it's so close. You know, there's an opportunity. Maybe my vote will count this time.
Yeah. I guess the other thing, you know, from the side of the Democrats, there's been this big question mark about whether there is a blue wave on the horizon in 2018, and we've seen it. We've seen little pieces of this again and again. It's not the clearest picture, but we had an election in Washington, and that went to the Democrats. We had an election in Alabama that was completely and totally not expected to go to the Democrats. It did go there.
But Dave, didn't we also have that big fight in Georgia that?
Absolutely. And, you know, the Georgia 6th was a very close, you know, loss for Joel Ossoff. And but looking across, like Tim is saying, if you take the 2016 results for the same districts, the same states, and you compare that to what we've seen in 2017, we've seen a 16-point swing towards the Democratic Party. And that is about 6 points more than they need to have a real shot at retaking the House and contesting the Senate.
I do want to jump in. We got a little correction wave from our engineer, Devlin Sweeney. Thank you. I think this may be a special election, so it may not be a six-year term.
Yeah, I think Roy is up for, or I'm sorry, Doug Jones is up for re-election as early as next November.
Yeah, you're correct about that. That's correct.
Thank you, Devlin.
So, something I want to bring up, and I think that is very important here, is that the conservatives, specifically the religious right, have been able to use kind of a cheat code in American politics since maybe Reagan running for governor of California. And that is, you convince your people, your voters, that if your opponent wins, the people you love are in danger, right? It's not just taxes are going to go up. It's not this or that. It's they're in danger. And
well, it's like the George Bush threat level.
Right. And this is something that both accidentally and on purpose, the conservative movement has used really successfully in the last 40 years. And we saw kind of the reverse of that finally on the Democratic side with the, you know, look at this guy who doesn't believe in Reconstruction, doesn't believe in, you know, women's rights or that they should vote. You know, look at this person who is a direct threat to you and your family, and it really paid off.
Well, I think you're outing yourself both as a gamer and as an IT professional with the metaphor cheat code. But I think it's a good metaphor nonetheless. And it's interesting because in my own biased opinion, we had a disclaimer at the beginning of the show. In my own biased opinion, the threat is real versus a lot of times the, excuse me, trumped up threats that the conservatives have. And what was the fascinating thing, besides the numbers and the people of color voters and the voters of color, which I think is huge and hopeful as the percentage of different voters changes in our country. I hope that's a good harbinger for that. But how many people of his party, of Roy Moore's party, were not willing to stand up to some of the crap that he's associated with? And in some ways, if it hadn't been scary, it was amusing to watch people dance all over the fact that they couldn't take a stand and they wouldn't stand for the Democrat because apparently that's political suicide in Alabama. But at the same time, there's this trope that the conservatives are the party of moralism. So where is the moralism for people who are supposedly the people we would count on to stand up to some pretty horrific behavior?
They didn't believe it. Well, it was not true. To them, it was not true.
And there was this interesting, they had 2% plus write-in vote. And one of the, I think the senior senator of Alabama came on unbidden and said voluntarily, I'm not voting for him. I voted for the other guy. And in a sense, he broke the pledge that I guess is very common in Republican politics that you always vote your ticket, period, regardless, period. And that decision on his part was public and everybody knew it. Subsequently, there's 2% write-in vote and he lost, and Roy Moore lost by 1.5%.
And to be fair, I just want to briefly say, as somebody who's a former member of the Whatcom Democratic Party, I have been given my own fair share of crap for voting my conscience instead of my party, and that goes both ways, Tim.
Well, I would say that, you know, the nature of parties is that they try to impose a certain amount of discipline, but I think that we're living in an era of extreme partisanship and hyper discipline. Let's say in the 60s, there were actually, hard to believe, but there were moderate Republicans in the Republican Party, and there were conservative Republicans in the Republican Party, and they were the Northern Democrats and the Southern Democrats, and there was a lot of dynamism. And that's a lot of that's fallen away. And one of the I think the victims of that trend has been that people vote their party ticket and not their conscience, and they vote for bad things because they're compelled to do so. And one would hope that, you know, that as things evolve in our political system, that people would get back to voting about things they believe in and they have conscience about.
I was just going to say, I think that also you saw a lot more crossing of the aisle for
correct
everybody on both parties aimed at getting stuff done.
Correct. Civil rights movement is a classic example
for sure,
where Lyndon Johnson could not get the votes he needed within the Democratic Party, so he did some phone calls in the Republican Party and he got it done.
You're listening to Cascadia News Now on KMRE and KAVZ. Our special guest tonight, Suzanne Blaise, General Manager, and Robert Clark, who is our Operations Manager of the station itself, and a very lively discussion. Dave, you look like you had a point. I don't want to lose it.
I just wanted to add, you know, one thing to that, to the National Republicans who looked at Roy Moore and supported him anyway, even though they might not harbor those same beliefs, you know.
You're so diplomatic. or any kind of.
Yeah. Political people are very, you know, aware of their surroundings, and they're very They follow patterns and they look for clues, and they really, really don't want to be associated with the loser because this is their livelihood. So they looked and they said, would Alabama vote for a alleged racist, alleged child abuser, alleged, you know, sexual assaulter? Would they vote for a, you know, kind of weird, not very bright person with all those things on their record? And they said, well, they did last year.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. Like, if you hadn't said it, I would say it. And you're right. I mean, that is the bread and butter of politics, whether you call it compromise or sausage making or fear of being real, fear of being yourself. But the voters are increasingly sick of it, which is why both Trump and Bernie Sanders were as popular as they were. Like, I don't care who what somebody stands for seems to be less important than the fact that they are legitimately standing at all.
Wow, what a great point. That's mm-hmm. awesome.
So we could talk about this all night. I just wanted to touch in, and Tim hinted at it. How does this affect or possibly affect our state and local 2018 elections? Dave, you want to take a stab at that?
Yeah, I think that this is going to be a indication that this is an opportunity to stand up and contest more seats. There are a lot of seats in Washington State for our legislature that are not contested on a regular basis. And hopefully this inspires folks around the state to say, you know what, I could do this.
One of the things I think that 2016 did was it rocked and it shook our confidence in polling statistics. Because every poll we had said that the election, presidential election, was going to go one way, and then suddenly it goes a different way. And so we've lost our trust in polls. And so when the polls are suggesting in Washington that it's going to be a big blue wave, there's some skepticism and some fear that there may be something wrong in our data collection or our methodology where we're not actually capturing what people are going to do. And so every one of these elections allows us to test that methodology and see if it's correct. And what we're looking at in Washington State is, yeah, we're probably looking at a big blue wave in 2018 in Washington State. But is what the polls are saying actually what's going to happen, you know, on election
day? My question would be, how well did the polls reflect the actual election results in Washington State last year?
Well, I think they did. And I think mm-hmm. the polls were – what you have to understand about polling is there's about a 3% margin of error one way or the other. And if you look at the presidential election, that was within 3%. So it's within the margin of error what happened there. So I don't think we should completely eliminate our confidence in polling. But I just have to say I just think that the confidence of polling was a little rocked.
Well, and commercial media gets overhyped because they need to hype something. The more 24/7 their cycle is, the more they have to hype anything over and over again. And of course, we were talking about uncontested races right after the election. Even though we had some pretty feisty races in Whatcom and Bellingham, there were several uncontested seats. And this is an area where we don't have polls. We don't have money for polls. And man, I've said it before, and I've said it, I'll keep saying it forever. I don't care how good somebody is. If we don't have a debate and we don't have a dialogue, then they're just automatically getting a nod, and that's not really good for us. So we've already told Tim Johnson we expect him to run. So Suzanne and Robert, I'm going to include you in that.
I hadn't planned on running for anything.
Well, here you are, okay. And I'm going to be your campaign manager. It's going to be great. And the first thing that we can talk about is what to do about our homeless situation. See how I segued that there? If you haven't been downtown, and I know people don't always get downtown, there has been a week-long ongoing protest at City Hall, literally on the lawn of City Hall, where Amy Glasser, our former candidate Amy Glasser, and some other organizers were just so frustrated at the lack of anything happening and our homeless population increasing, the weather getting progressively colder, that they grabbed a bunch of people and they said, let's just go and stay on City Hall. And so there's been a week-long literal campout, and man, there's no way to get
your local government to respond faster than having a tent city on the lawn of City Hall, for better or worse, for whatever this may or may not be changing. I've heard some people who did know about it say, well, what are those people doing out there? It's so cold. So let's stop for a moment and remember that they would be outside without a home anyway. So some local businesses have been really great at donating food, but none of us would be aware. The local businesses, like, it's so easy to let the issue be invisible. Just a quick update, and Tim, you may have some information as well, but I know that they met with Mayor Kelly Linville a few days ago. Some people have been housed or temporarily given housing. Councilman Barry Buchanan was there yesterday, and he met, from what I heard from Amy Glasser, there wasn't a concrete response, but or concrete action. But that's what I know.
Well, there's, I mean, not only is there action going on outside of City Hall, but there's actually been some pretty amazing things going on inside City Hall. The last couple of council meetings, the public has shown up to deliver comment. The council right now is trying to draft, they were drafting two ordinances recently. One was on trying to come up with some standards about incarceration, criminal justice, social justice on one vector. And then on the other vector, they're trying to come up with establish some tenants' rights and some and try to address the issue of rental security. And those have generated comments from all over the spectrum, because as you can imagine, those are all on a spectrum. If you want to look at homelessness, you have to look at it on the spectrum of, you know, what happens in the criminal justice system, and you have to look at it on the spectrum of what happens in terms of housing security, income security, all of these things. And the public has stepped up, and in fact, the council was expected to approve their tenants' rights ordinance, but they decided to hold that back because they had received so much commentary. They wanted to give some thought to that. So there is a very dynamic discussion going on in Bellingham, not just in terms of protest and making the public aware that this is a problem in Bellingham, but also from a policy level, showing up, public showing up, letting their elected leaders know what they think.
I know when I drove home on Friday, last Friday, or last Saturday, I was really shocked. I did not expect to see that, and here these folks were, and two signs really stuck out at me. One was, this is what homelessness looks like, and the other one was, stop the sweeps. So it seemed like...
And do you want to elaborate on the stops the sweeps and what that might mean to you?
Well, to me, I think that the city regularly sends folks in and breaks up homeless camps and sends folks sort of move it along, move on your way. And there really isn't a place for them to go to. So they just have to try to find another location somewhere. And I know that when I drive home every day, I go by the homeless shelter. And here are these people in a big, long line, and it's this weather outside, and they're covered up with tarps and the whole bit, and they're sleeping on the concrete. And it's horrible.
And part of that is because there is no day shelter, and the city, to give them credit, had a plan to build a shelter that would be a day shelter, but the Lighthouse Mission doing the best it can, but also it's for nighttime.
Right. I think there's two pressures on those sweeps as well. The one pressure is that the community is, I don't want to give them all too much credit, but the community is addressing the housing issue in Bellingham by basically building more housing. Mm-hmm. And every time you build housing on an empty lot, it probably displaces a camp. The other vector, I think, on that is that, for creek restoration and for environmental concerns of our waterways, et cetera, Parks Department, they're finding these camps and they're trying to get those camps out because those camps are damaging to the foliage of our creeks and our waterways and our park systems. And so all of these things are all part of this very difficult puzzle.
And there's the business community, which on some levels, there are people who are to an extreme of, there's one person standing there and I want them the heck off of my sidewalk.
And there's also legitimate concerns that people are being scared, or people feel scared and they won't come into my business, and that drives more businesses to close.
Well, and even from the other perspective too, just playing devil's advocate for a moment, you know, as a homeowner, I don't want to come home and find people, hinky folks in the alleyway. You know,
well, you should come live in the Leonard Streets with me, Suzanne. Robert, you were starting to say that.
Well, I was just going to say, similar to what Suzanne and you were saying, is there's this other unintended consequence of this new factory going up down at Cornwall, where they have construction workers working on it and soon factory workers working in it. Well, Cornwall in that section of the city was a popular place for people to live in their RVs or cars. And now I've noticed that either there's been more enforcement or more publicity or more something, they can't necessarily do that as much as they wanted to. And that was one of the more popular, safer places to camp in your RV.
Right. I don't know what the answer is. I feel like there has to be one, that smart people with good hearts can actually come together and figure this out so that, you know, there's a way that we're dealing with it. I think we just really haven't been dealing with it.
You just heard Suzanne Blaze and Robert Clark, who are our guests on Cascadia News Now tonight. Go ahead, Tim.
Well, I was going to say that one of the things that happened through the mayor's office was the idea of siting a homeless center. There was an idea that the city would have to work with county administration to get that done. And there was a sense from the city that they didn't want to put too much pressure on the county prior to the election for a variety of reasons. After the election, I think the relationship between the city and the county has gotten a little frosty. I think the city was forbearing on that issue before the election, and now it's difficult to press forward after the election. And obviously, I think in order to site a homeless center, there's going to have to be some cooperation. The city failed with the Port of Bellingham on cooperation.
Or the Port of Bellingham failed with
correct,
the city.
Correct. You could put it that way too. Or they're going to have to work with Whatcom County in some capacity, and it's just trying to press forward and get that done.
Right. Dave, you walk by every day on your way to and from work. You've been a little silent on this issue. What are your thoughts?
Well, primarily I'm happy that people are out there, and I'm impressed that they've been out there as long as they have. This has not been a very good week in Bellingham weather, and, you know, you see events like this. I saw over the weekend there was a big one in Edinburgh where they had, you know, celebrities come, and it was this big fundraising thing, and, you know, a bunch of people slept out in a park, and it was a night. And municipal issues are hard because they come in two speeds. Either it's slow and doesn't actually solve the thing, like removing the sign from the picket bridge, or it just takes forever, and it becomes just kind of crushingly slogging mess. And, you know, part of the issue with homelessness is that it is such a big problem that it is going to take commitment. It is going to take sticking with it. And this is a great example of people being out there, you know, putting their behinds on the line, and, you know, not letting the city get away with this. And I hope they were not affected by today's water main breach.
Yeah, I was wondering if that might be pinned on the protest, but I haven't seen anything from the city of Bellingham. There's so many different angles of this issue, and I think you really hit the nail on the head, Dave, in that this isn't a quick resolve, and this isn't something that the city can quickly resolve. I'm wondering, is it unfair to be on City Hall, on the lawn of City Hall, when it seems like the city of Bellingham has been trying?
No, it is not unfair. And because this is a moral, if not civic, emergency, you know, we talked about the homeless camps, and homeless camps are, from any perspective, a bad situation. From a public health perspective, they're bad. From a general safety perspective, they're bad. You know, they're one of the major fires menacing Los Angeles right now started from a fire in a homeless camp that got out of control. And these are not good situations, but just chasing people out of them doesn't actually address things. This is something the city needs to fix, and they need to get on it.
You are listening to KMRE 102.3 FM Bellingham and 102.5 KAVZ Deming Van Zandt, Cascadia News Now. We're so lucky to have Robert Clark and Suzanne Blaze from our own radio station weighing in. That was kind of a leading question, but I feel like, if I can speak for everybody in the room, most of us are in favor of action. We're in favor of civic action. We're in favor of people taking action. And there's really nobody in the room to say, those rascally, blah, blah, blah. But I know it's out there. I know that it's causing resentment. And maybe that's important, that it's all bringing it to a head. But come on, wouldn't it be nice to have people camping on homes in Edgemoor?
Yeah, I don't want people falling off the cliff. I don't want people getting injured on topiary.
And they don't have any sidewalks. Can I just say, like, Edgemoor has no sidewalks, and that's intentional.
That's our next public health crisis.
Right. Well, I think it's important because they don't want people walking mm-hmm. around.
Well, and they're an aging population in Edgemoor.
Yeah.
Oh. Keep that in mind.
Aging and or rich or both. So if you were the mayor sitting at this table, what would you say is the best three things that you could do right now?
Well, I guess if I were the mayor, I would say that the city is at work. You know, what we're talking about with this particular homeless population is these are people that are hard to place because they don't qualify in one way or another for some program. In other words, if you're a teen, if you're a young person, there's a program for you to get you off the street. If you're a pregnant mother or a mother with young children, there are programs that can get you off the street. If you are a victim of domestic violence, there are programs.
If you check the boxes.
So yeah. What we're dealing with are the people that aren't they're not entitled to some public solution. That's the remnant, and they're a very difficult group to place. And part of the problem there is that they don't generate a lot of sympathy because a lot of them have drug and alcohol problems, and they create problems within even their own homeless camp community. They create trouble. So I think if I were the mayor, you know, if I were going to speak on her behalf, I would say that, you know, Bellingham's done a pretty good job of addressing some of these issues. In fact, I was talking to Greg Winter at the Opportunity Council recently, and he said the number of homeless veterans that want to be placed in a program that are not placed is zero. In other words, every veteran who would like to be housed and has come forward and would like to be housed is housed now.
That's awesome news.
Yeah.
That's great.
And I think in the juvenile housing, it's the same thing. So is there a remnant problem left over, and is it a significant problem? Yeah, I think it is, yeah.
And that's exactly why Bellingham tried to have a wet shelter, which was a hard sell for those same reasons. And it's great that mothers with children, and we still don't have all of the mothers
right.
with children off the streets, but there's a place. But this is something that gets to the heart. But like
the
said,
other thing that I think yeah. If I were the mayor, I would I don't know if she's gone public with this, but it's common information that the day center that's down by the mission has to close. And so that center, which is serving this community, has to close.
Permanently?
It will close soon, yes. And so it's the crisis is going to be, you know, magnified because of that.
So one of the things that makes this more frustrating, at least for me, Suzanne, you mentioned that you drove by, and that was the first you heard about it. You seem to be a pretty in touch with the news person. And I was walking by, and I'm like, hey, there's a bunch of tents here. and we can get into, I think, some of the organizers, maybe not the most media savvy people, but they did try to contact the Bellingham Herald. The Bellingham Herald has done no reporting that I have seen. And it's one of the things that, not to toot our own horn, but these are the kinds of issues that you're not going to hear about. And if you don't drive downtown, if you walk or drive downtown, great. You probably know about this, and this is like, why are you talking about this now? But if you don't, if you go between
Ferndale and Alabama Street or something, then, you know, Roosevelt or whatever, you may not even know that this is happening. And so there is a conversation to be said about maybe protests and actions need to reach out to different forms of media. In the meantime, it is ever more crucial that this kind of media and community media exists.
I think you absolutely should toot your own horn. Absolutely.
This is Suzanne Blaise, general manager of KMRE and completely objective woman.
Completely objective. No, absolutely. This is the last place where people from the community can come and share their stories. And this is one huge story that our community deserves to know about. And we just don't. I didn't know about it. I had no idea.
And the funny thing is, I also drove by it, and from the library, you didn't know what it was. You had to ride past it to understand, because the signage and the way the signage was painted or pointed. But at the same time, people like Amy Glasser have been here, or at least have been aware of Cascadia News Now, for example, just to name a show. But specifically, our radio station has been eager to get these sort of important news items out into the community. And that's what we're here for.
I think that, you know, Tim with Cascadia Weekly and this station and this show are probably the two places that people can actually go and share news and information. I think the Herald and the Cascade Radio Group are mostly rip and read now. I mean, occasionally I think the Cascade Radio Group does do local news and
like urgent alerts.
Yeah, urgent alerts and things like that. But there's nothing like this for them.
And I do want to give a shout out to our newest public affairs show, Community Voice. Community Voice is started by Rosalinda Guillen and Junga Subedar and people from Black Lives Matter, Community to Community, Bellingham Racial Justice Coalition, Whatcom Civil Rights Project, and you should listen because they are they're talking about things that nobody else is talking about in a way nobody else is talking about them, regardless of where you are on the political spectrum. It's important to hear these voices. They brought up this story this past week. And so, yeah, programs like this are how this kind of news is getting out, if at all. Yes, Facebook is great. Okay, I didn't really say that. Let me just walk that back.
Wait a minute.
Facebook is used a lot for live streams if you have internet, mm-hmm. number one. If you are a certain age group, if mm-hmm. you are of a certain echelon, if you have a certain amount of privilege, there are activists using Facebook, but it's still a bubble.
Plus, it's like a dandelion seed in the wind. If it happens to land on you and take root, you go, oh, there's a story. Otherwise, your news feed's like 100 things long. You see the top three, and if it's not in the top three, you don't see it.
Dave, maybe in another episode, we'll have a long talk about the word algorithms.
Yes, we will. I just want to, you know, point out, there's people at Cascade Radio Group that are working hard and doing a good job. There's people at the Bellingham Herald that are working hard that are doing a good job. If you are local and you want the Bellingham Herald to cover your event or protest or whatever, you got to convince the Associated Press to pay someone to write it up for them. It's just not going to happen.
That is true, and that is also not true. And I'm going to put myself out on a limb because I'm not running for office and say that the editor of the Bellingham Herald has refused to cover stories. This is hearsay. I'll just say this. I have not heard it from her mouth, but I've heard over and over again that she refused to cover this story. I heard from three or four people who desperately tried to get her to cover the person who died in Sumas, and I won't report what she anecdotally said, but the Bellingham Herald never covered Ernesto Silvera's death. An immigrant who was working for 12 hours in the smoke-filled skies, 90-degree-plus weather in Sumas. So, yes, I hear you. I understand it is a world where paper media especially is going by the wayside. Why would I get the paper when they're printing something and I'm already on Twitter and I already know? I understand that, and I understand that they have fewer and fewer people and that they can afford fewer and fewer people. That's just basic math. But there's something to be said in pointing a finger at what stories they choose. And you're absolutely right. If you have an event and they like that event, they'll cover it. But is that news?
Well, and spinning the conversation slightly, getting community media gives students, faculty, members of the community, grandma, grandpa, a choice of programming, not just what their political views are, but also what their cultural views are, or just what interests them. And that sort of direct, more or less unfiltered communication is what community media is all about. And being able to take someone to task, for example, like we are sort of kind of, is a great example of the honesty that you can get from people sitting in a room talking about something that isn't normally being talked about unless it happens to be in Cascadia Weekly.
which it often does.
Well, right. Exactly.
But the print equivalent of community media.
Right. Yes. And you know, I always step back a little bit from being too critical of other print publications because I know that they're in difficult straits in a lot of ways. But I do think that there are decisions that newspapers make that aren't necessarily the best decisions. I mean, you know, one of the decisions that the Bellingham Herald made several years ago that I think was a fatal decision to the Herald was to eliminate their opinions page. And in the elimination of their opinions page, they eliminated their letters to the editor. I think that the letters to the editor are the finest part of our paper because that's the readers actually telling us things, expressing themselves.
It's better than polls
and from a business,
around election time.
Yeah,
sure.
From a business perspective, it's free content. So it's content that you do not have to pay for that you can put in the paper. And people like to read what other people think. They like to hear what other people think. I think that was a major error on their part. I don't understand it. I would, if I were the publisher of the Herald, on Monday I'd print all the letters to the editor.
Well, let's talk a little bit less about them and a little bit more about us and the reason that we were able to bring Robert and Suzanne in after very long and exhausting days that they had is because this station is at risk right now, and it's pretty crucial. We have been at the Spark Museum for 10 years since they got the license, and Spark Museum has asked to have the space, and they've asked us to find a different space. What that means is not just finding a new location for our station, but it also means that we have to become fully independent, that we don't have an umbrella nonprofit like the Spark Museum shoring us up anymore. So it costs several thousand dollars a year just for the very basic bare bones equipment and programming. And it's really up to you, the community, to make this happen. And if you're listening to Cascadia News Now, right now, either you're driving around lost in your car, or you really care about this, and you really care about these shows, and you really believe that stories like the homeless protest and Ernesto Ibarra are crucial to hear about and learn about. If you will take a minute and go to savecamre.org, this is the pledge drive portion of the show. But seriously, I don't care. I don't have a real job. I'm going to donate money. I don't care if you can give $5 because the money is important. But like a lot of grassroots campaigns, it's also how many people stand up for us and say this is important. We need to hear that.
One of the most important reasons that I have been involved in this, in the push for community media since 1999, has been because, you know, in Facebook, your community can be people from all over the world, but with some place like, you know, Cascadia Weekly or KMRE, you have the community that represents your geographic region. You know, I mean, this is who we are. These are the voices of our people. These are the issues that matter to us. And you don't have, it's not about the technology. It's not about radio. It's about, you know, accessing the content via podcast or maybe you listen to it in your garage when you're fixing your bike at night, or maybe you listen to it when you're driving around town or whatever. But it's not about the technology. It's about the fact that we help people understand who their community actually is. They're your next door neighbors, the people 5 miles down the road. You know, these are the folks that actually affect you in your daily life.
Suzanne, what would you like to see happen? I mean, if you could wave your wand and say that this is an outcome that I think would be good for the station and for the community, what would that look like?
Suzanne, who is the general manager, remind everybody.
Well, I think that one of the best things that we do as a small community-oriented, nonprofit, all-volunteer, independent station is we have an opportunity to reach out to underserved voices, to people in our community who have stories to tell but no way to actually tell it. And Stephanie has been a huge person, sort of the engine, the powerhouse behind that happening. And then you bring people in and you train them on how to use the equipment. So our equipment is always open to people in the community, right? We're totally willing to facilitate that and help them tell their own story. So for me, the best possible outcome is for us to have our own nonprofit or be under an umbrella nonprofit that works with us to have our own space that is sustainable and to be able to have a couple staff people to actually, you know, grease the wheels of that process to get more people in here to tell their stories. And to make it sustainable over time.
Robert, you and Suzanne both dedicate so many hours to making this station stay alive. I have to give a shout out to our fabulous engineer who keeps us on the air, Michael Gilbert, wherever you are. We love you so hard. But all of you donate hours upon hours, day, night, middle of the night, and you have jobs elsewhere. Why is it so crucial to you to keep KMRE going?
Well, it's funny because there's a major program in town called Shop Local, and I've always used a sort of similar but unfortunately very unknown to most everybody else language called Listen Local or Read Local. I mean, that's one of my things. I love hearing stories that are relevant to me because we're talking about Cornwall and everybody knows where Cornwall is, or we're talking about, you know, the waterfront, and everybody's talking about the waterfront. Well, those local areas resonate with people that live in this area, and yet you just wouldn't hear much about that or even read much about that if all you had was the Bellingham Herald or if all you had was
Seattle,
and you know, they come up when it's a major deal and then go back down to their, you know, home. Anyway, the point is that we're in this really interesting situation. We're in sort of this tucked away corner of the world, and what better place for us to have voices that are local than in a room on Bay Street that's down the street from everything in the center of downtown? And maintaining that consistency and keeping us on the air is such a huge thing. It doesn't bother me at all waking up in the middle of the night and resetting the monitors or turning them on and turning them off again and whatever.
He says save, that now.
Yeah, well.
SaveKMRE.org has a lot more information and a great way to donate. Dave, you put in a lot of hours too. You're our IT guy and our engineering trainer as well.
Well, yeah, and I think to build on what everybody else is saying, we're kind of as a society really diminishing our media. We've talked about people getting the other news from Facebook, and there's Nextdoor, and there are ways to communicate with your neighbors, but it's always someone else's game. It's always someone else's platform. If, you know, you don't like what Facebook does with your information, you're
like
stuck.
Having a warrant, or your local sheriff has a warrant to look at all of your information.
Yeah, and you know, here we've got a radio station. You can buy a radio. You can listen to a radio. Nobody has any idea, you know, what you're doing with it. You know, it's yours, and it's something that's so rare in our society today. You get to do something and enjoy something without someone tracking it, without someone seeing how long you're listening and, you know, what you were most engaged with. And, you know, I want to say, go to savekmre.org and make a donation, and don't stop there. Come down here, make an appointment with us. I will treat you. I will teach you how to use the board. I will teach you how to do audio editing. It's going to be great. Come on down.
Well, I guess I would add to that that it's also somebody trying to extract a profit from simply the relay of information. And I think that the message is that the public, I think, needs to step up a bit. And the reason that is because their traditional mechanisms are under assault. They really are. They're the newspaper model, the business model of that is becoming very difficult. And you have to be a gigantic conglomerate somehow to do it. And the same thing with broadcasts, the same thing, you know. And so one of the things you see is this gobbling up of airwaves and media space, monopolization in order to try to extract some profitability out of it. But I think the public is ultimately the loser in that scenario, you know. And we're having this debate in this country right now about the issue of net neutrality, and it's the same kind of thing where people's access to the internet is going to get throttled back or at risk of being throttled back because somebody wants to eke a little bit more money out of that. Mm-hmm. And I think the public needs to be aware that these things are happening, and I think they need to step forward on it. You know, I've been giving a lot of thought to, you know, the issue of net neutrality, and I think what it the model I would put out there is this is kind of the way that when Teddy Roosevelt was president, he looked at public lands as things that were being bought up and purchased and used for extraction, and he set up a national park system to preserve that. And by doing that, he set a tone for the country. And I think that we need that same sort of tone set for our public media space as well, where these are protected spaces that and they're not for sale. They're not available for sale.
Right.
And
two quick thoughts. I was thinking that that the decline of the newspapers, I think, really started when the focus became make the most money you possibly can.
Right.
It's not enough anymore to break even or to make a little bit of profit. We have to make the absolute most money we can out of this, or else we're getting rid of it, and we're downsizing and we're streamlining. We're finding any way we can cut the pages. And the other piece, as far as the net neutrality is concerned, I've always sort of thought of the internet as much the same as water. You know, we have got people don't make money off of water,
right?
We cover the costs of the water, but everybody has access to it. And I think that today in 2017, a legitimate case could be made that the internet is the water of the future.
Right.
Well, everybody has access to it except for City Hall, but we hope that they fix that little problem. You wanted to jump in, Robert?
Well, I was going to mention something else that Teddy Roosevelt did was he took on trusts and started as a Republican to take a look at the monopolization of any resource or any major issue and say, monopolies don't work. Monopolies tend to create high prices and bad quality service and limited access. And by diversifying things, you at the very least, you get options. And so, like, recently we've had CenturyLink come to town. And so for the first time we have direct cable competition. But net neutrality goes away, and they both look at each other and they go, well, we could just jack up prices. You know, today you jack it up and tomorrow I'll jack it up and then Thursday you jack it up again and so on.
Divide the pie.
Well, that would never happen.
No. Oh, airlines don't do that. That's right. No
price.
That.
Well, yeah. You know, one of the things that you're all touching on is shared space and public space, and the national parks are very literally a common area. When I was at Mount Rushmore last year, I mean, more than the heads of the presidents, I was so impressed by people who had come from every corner, not of our country, but of the world. And it just felt like this beautiful meeting place, people I would never have conversations with before. The parks are a commons, and the radio, especially community radio, is all we have of a town hall and a commons in terms of dialogue. Every commercial radio station comes at you with a framework and a point of view, and you know it. Same with television. Either it's a conservative station, or it's a liberal station, or it's a rock station, or it's a disco station, but this is where people from different walks of life and people who don't get access to the airwaves and people who don't have privilege can have their voices heard and have views exchanged.
Yeah, but only for the moment, because unfortunately the current national administration looks at these public lands, these public airwaves, as profit-making locations. And if it can turn them over to someone else that can turn a buck on them, they will. This LPFM role that we live in now could end.
And closer to home, KMRE could end, because we don't have a space, a literal space, and we don't have the funding for our station. So please go to savekmre.org. Yeah, I'm looking at you, Suzanne.
Everybody can't be more eloquent than you, Stephanie. You said it all.
You need a tote bag. You need a tote bag, or you want bumper stickers? We got you.
We don't even have. We do have bumper stickers. We don't even have the perks.
We need a telethon.
Yeah,
I will tell you this right now. Totally. If you give $1,000 right now, I will donate an interview on any issue you want, FCC approved. Any issue you want, I will do an interview for Cascadia News Now. If you donate $5,000 right now, you get a whole show.
Oh my God.
If you donate $10,000, I'll tell you my theory as to why the Bellingham Police haven't tweeted since Chief Cook left.
Ooh.
Wow.
Holding out for that 10K.
Suzanne, I am looking at you, which you can't see on the radio, but I am looking at you because you are our fearless leader, and we have 1 minute left, and I'd love you to take us out.
I would just like to encourage everybody. I mean, I've said this before, but it's because I passionately believe it, and that is that if we don't tell our stories about who we are, then other people get to tell them about us, and they define us for ourselves. I mean, we are such a beautiful small community here that has such a unique character that if that character is important to you, then please, please invest in local, nonprofit, community-oriented, all-volunteer, independent radio.
KMRE. SaveKMRE.org. And I want to give one more shout out to Community Vos. They have taken to calling Whatcom County the Deep North. And I urge you to listen to them to understand why. But what Suzanne's talking about is we all assume a certain thing about our area. And stations like this give you the opportunity to learn. It's maybe not all it's cracked up to be, or not all you think it is. You have been listening to a very lively Cascadia News Now. Find us on the Facebooks and give us your feedback at Cascadia News Now. Find our archives at CascadiaNewsNow.com. And please, if you remember one thing, go to SaveKMRE.org. Our new hashtag as of tonight is Listen Local. And I think we need to use that everywhere. Thank you so much, Robert. Our hosts tonight were Tim Johnson, Dave Willingham, Robert Clark, and Suzanne Blaze. Cascadia News Now is engineered by Devlin Sweeney. Thank you so much, Devlin. And it's edited by Dave Willingham. It's produced by me, Stephanie Contouris. This is KAVZ 102.5 in Deming, Van Zandt, and KMRE 102.3 FM in Bellingham.
We lived our little drama. We kissed in a field of white, and stars fell on Alabama last night. I can't forget the glamour. Your eyes held a tender light, and stars fell on Alabama last night. I never planned in my imagination a situation so heavenly, a fairy land where no one else could enter, and in the center, just you and me. My heart beat like a hammer, my arms wound around you tight, and stars fell on out.